You know what keeps most people up at night?
It's not politics.
It's money. Dave Ramsey helps you take control of it, one decision at a time. Real callers, real situations, and straight talk about getting out of debt, building wealth, and finally telling your money where to go.
Where to go.
Instead of wondering where it went.
Where it went.
Dave Ramsey, weeknights 7 to 10 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative,
Informative, local,
dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Update. I know there was a story this morning about the Cobb Center feeding program. Just like to put a couple of things out there.
David Stafford yesterday filling in for D.C. Reeves, Mayor of Pensacola, does a weekly press conference typically on Tuesday, but he was on his way. D.C. was en route to D.C. I know. It never stops being funny to me. Anyway, so he was not available. But yeah, the Cobb Center, remember yesterday, so if you weren't with us, the story about the Cobb Center is that you had this woman show up to the city council and then the county commission and complain very loudly that the Council on Aging of West Florida had stopped serving meals to seniors there. And, you know, Amy Miller, the deputy city administrator, had basically said that they had tried everything they could to work this out with the Council on Aging, but the Council on Aging had kind of not done what, you know, had not worked with them. The woman said that, you know, what does it have to do with her that there's some personnel conflict between the city and the Council on Aging? Well, yesterday I talked at length with Josh Newby, the executive director and also a very good friend of mine, and asked, you know, hey, well, what's the explanation? And the short version is that they were working for like 14 months to try to resolve what was a not just a minor personnel dispute, but an employee of the city at the Cobb Center that they say basically caused their person who was there doing the food distribution to feel harassed, extraordinarily harassed, calling him in tears, just repeatedly try to fix this. They tried to work with the city, and the city had basically said, we will fix it, and hadn't done anything. And so that person was still there. They even tried swapping out the person who was distributing the food, and it didn't matter. It was still the same kinds of problems. And finally, Josh said, I can't put my employees in this situation. You guys aren't solving this problem. You're not moving this person. And so we're going to just have to stop doing food there. We'll transport these people to other locations if they want. We'll bring food elsewhere. We'll try to find a solution. Only a few of them took advantage of it, and then that's kind of where things stood after we talked to Josh yesterday. And he said, look, we're willing to return to the Cobb Center immediately, you know, tomorrow, if you move this employee out of their position because they are the single problem that is making it so that we can't be there and it's not safe for, you know, our employees and, you know, to be in that situation. So yesterday, David Stafford, obviously had heard the interview that we did with Josh and wanted to address it and talk about, you know, kind of their response.
One, all seniors who previously received meals at Cobb Center through the Council on Aging Dining Program continue to receive meals 5 days a week, some from the Council on Aging at other locations and sub at Cobb Center through a variety of alternative dining options.
Okay, so the seniors are at least now getting meals, he says.
We're actively exploring appropriate permanent senior nutrition program options, including possibility of resumption of COA's programming at that location.
All right, so they're working on a long-term solution.
In addition, city staff with the help of volunteers are providing, preparing, and serving food so that every senior who needs a meal at Cobb has one.
A combination of city employees and volunteers are doing it right now.
Now, the city has tried not to air issues, personnel issues, publicly. Unfortunately, it's not been handled the same way by the folks at Council on Aging.
Now, that's obviously a remark in response to the interview that Josh did. It may also be in response to one of the interviews that he did briefly with Channel 3 last week when the story had kind of, you know, been early in its development. But, you know, what he's saying is, look, the Council on Aging has decided to come out and talk about this being a personnel matter. We haven't really done that. I thought actually Josh was pretty restrained. You know, he said he personally observed the problems. The problems were repeatedly reported to him. You know, he didn't name the employee, which is certainly an element of restraint. I suppose he could have. But in any case, you know, the city is basically saying, look, this isn't a matter for big public discussion. I don't know whether it is or it isn't, but it has become such. I mean, honestly, what I'd like to hear from the city is, you know, do you believe the allegations are true? Do you believe this employee is a problem? I have no idea who it is. You know, I'm sure the people at Bayview know who it is, but I don't have any idea who this is. And, you know, the city doesn't seem to be accepting that the person may be a problem. And, of course, I'm at a secondhand distance to all of this, but I know Josh really well, and I trust him. And, you know, I know his account of things is, I mean, not just that I know him, but he seemed very credible in the way he described all of this yesterday.
It's important to note that the folks at Council on Aging have been given numerous opportunities to provide written statements describing specific incidents, including information about those incidents, witnesses, etc., so we can conduct a proper investigation if one is warranted. To date, it's been indicated to us that no actionable documentation has been received. So we can't just discipline, relocate, or terminate a city employee or a contract employee without specific allegations that we are able to substantiate.
So, look, I know all the players in this, right? You know, David Stafford's a really good person. I've known Amy Miller as long as I've lived here. She's a really good person. David, too, you know, same thing. You know, I've known Josh as long as we've lived here. This is a weird move to me, saying that the Council on Aging hasn't provided any written documentation. It might be true. I didn't know that every allegation had to be in writing in some sort. I would think they would have been doing if the Council on Aging is at the point after 14 months of complaining that they're willing to pull services out, swap their own employees to try to solve the problem, and, you know, you would think there'd be an investigation at that point. What I can't figure, I'm guessing, this is pure speculation because I can't figure it out otherwise. I just figure there's got to be some legal liability by the city, some union element maybe that's shielding this person. I can't figure it out. It doesn't make any sense to me. Because at the very least, if you're seeing this happen, it would seem like you would address it. I mean, you would at least say, you know, hey, our folks don't see anything wrong with this person. We like this person. They're doing a great job. That's a very different defense from saying, well, you know, we don't have any written allegations. I mean, like, that's kind of an odd move. To me, that's an odd move. But, you know, all of this I'm doing on sort of secondhand information, trying to figure it out.
So the assertion that this is simply an issue of a hostile city employee, that's not correct. There are more deeper issues that need to be looked into by both parties.
Both parties have deeper issues. Well, what are the deeper issues on the city side? I mean, that seems to be an admission of some kind of responsibility on the city side. It's also a desire for Council on Aging to say that maybe it's on their side as well. And, you know, again, not being present in the circumstance, but I know Josh real well. And he says, I've had firsthand observation of all of this and the problems that it's caused. So I don't get what's going on. I confess, I can't. It's hard to come on the air and be like, hey, I got a story here and I don't understand it. But that's where we're at. Even Tanner Stewart yesterday from Channel 3, who I'm guessing heard the interview and was following up on it and saying, seriously, this is all you're saying?
On the Cobb Center situation, can you give us the status of that staff member? I mean, nothing's changed on their employment. And what is your reaction to hearing the Council on Aging, I mean, speaking out?
I think you already addressed our reaction to it. You know, try not to hear personnel issues. That staff member who works for us is still employed there. We're trying to resolve the issue. We have been with Council on Aging. We're hopeful that we can come to some resolution. But we're addressing it within the manner that we thought was appropriate.
Yeah, so we're left with, I think, kind of more questions than answers at this point. The good news, I suppose, is that some combination of volunteer city staff and feeding them at other places, the seniors are getting fed. That's the good news. That's the thing that sort of matters the most in the end. But it's all just kind of, I don't know, it's a weird story. I'll just put it that way. 519 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. There was actually another thing that came up yesterday in the press conference that I thought was kind of a, this is just completely unrelated, but it was kind of a cool note. I have not yet been down to look at the Palafox construction. I keep thinking I will, or I keep being in the vicinity and then forgetting, you know, just because I just kind of want to see it. I think that kind of stuff is interesting. But one of the things I had worried about is I'd actually go down there and wouldn't really be able to see anything because they've got all the barriers up, making it so that, you know, you can't really see anything. And apparently the companies that are running things have specifically kept it so that you can see what's going on because so many people are interested in, you know, being able to look at what's happening to their favorite street.
One of the other interesting things about that, I'm sure you've seen if you've been down there, they actually created gaps in the, you know, kind of the signage along the fence line. And there was concern after started putting up the signage that they were going to block people's views because people were enthralled and actually watching the construction. So if you get out there, you notice now they deliberately put left gaps between the signage so people could view the work that's going on. Some cute pictures I've just seen on Instagram with some children. Their heads up, their faces up against the fence, looking at the board.
Oh, they left peepholes. I love it. That's great, you know, because kids are interested, adults are interested, you know, random talk show hosts might be interested. And I love that because, you know, a lot of times you go to a work site and what they have is the fences with the kind of built-in curtains or the vinyl over them or whatever, and you can't see anything, and you're always kind of curious. And a lot of times what you're wondering is, well, what are they building there? Is that going to be a new bookstore or more likely a Circle K? You know, I'm thinking of Tippin right now in Creighton. But you always kind of wonder what's going on. You want to see it. We want to see stuff. And they shut it off. Well, in this case, we obviously know what's coming, but it's still kind of fun to see. I mean, it's kind of weird to see somebody ripping up your street and digging holes and putting in sewer pipe and all that kind of stuff, or, you know, storm drains anyway. 437-1620, 437-1620. Always feel free to text me about anything at all. I'm Andrew McKay.
Pizza's here.
Oh, great. I'd love some, but I'm worried about my stomach issues.
If you're worried about having diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools, it may not just be stomach issues. It could be a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
I've changed him, fed him, walked him around, and he's still crying. Now I'm panicking. What should I do?
It's okay. We're glad you called. We learned during the Period of Purple crying program that babies tend to cry a lot in the first few months of life.
If nothing is working and you need a break, put the baby in a safe place and take a few minutes to walk away and calm down.
During the Period of Purple crying, it is crucial to stay calm and never shake a baby. To learn more, visit PreventChildAbuseFL.org.
This message is sponsored by the Ounce of Prevention Fund of Florida, the State of Florida, Department of Health, and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
It all comes down to this, folks.
Yep, the entire season is on the line.
But my throat has officially thrown in the towel.
Sounds like you need Vicks VapoCool drops. They're max strength, hand vaporized sore throat pain.
Whoa! These VapoCool drops hit fast!
Speaking of fast, did you just see that play?
Yeah, he vaporized that ball.
That pun should have come with a penalty.
Vaporize sore throat pain with Vicks VapoCool drops. Use as directed. VapoCool.
Something important happens.
You don't have time to wait.
Breaking news lives here.
Here.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
That was a preemptive shh. Just know I have a whole bag of shh with your name on it.
Shout to the heart, and you're to blame, darling. You give love a bad name.
What you may not know, and I feel at this point I do have to explain, is that the state of Florida joined a coalition of states a couple of years ago passing the non-interrupted music protection act and certain named songs like You Give Love a Bad Name. It's actually illegal under the FCC rules for me to interrupt that before we get to that part of the song. So I just want to, you know, I know some people might, well, why is he waiting so long before he talks? It's actually a law. It's actually a law that protects you from that and protect, I mean, prevents me. I mean, I just, you know, feel like that didn't get enough attention when it happened. PJ, you're laughing. Like, what, you think I'm making this up?
Maybe.
But isn't there also a part of you that thinks we need such a law? David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
I was just thinking, thank goodness they're finally looking out for us.
Finally addressing the needs of the listening audience. That's right.
This is something we needed.
You know, you have an FCC license on the expectation that you'll do something beneficial for the community, that it's of public service, right? And
absolutely,
how many times have you had your DJ or your talk show host talk over the good part of the music and not pay it off, and you think, well, that ought to be illegal. Well, you know,
mandatory
it is.
Mandatory prison time
or,
is what that
or
should
be. Or maybe it's not. Yeah. You know, I could be making it all up.
Well, a man's in custody, Andrew, after spraying an unknown substance on Ilhan Omar at a Minneapolis town hall yesterday. Omar had just called for Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem to resign before a 55-year-old man apparently lunged at her and sprayed her with whatever the substance was. Police say Omar was not hurt. The man was charged with third-degree assault. Extreme cold temperatures and wind chill continuing to freeze the eastern U.S. this week, bringing record low temperatures to much of the south. And Meta and YouTube are in court this week over accusations that they deliberately created addictive products that harm young users. Snap and TikTok have already settled out of court with the plaintiff in this case. Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg is expected to testify at some point during the trial.
Just a clarification on terminology. Is he the CEO of Meta or is he a Meta CEO?
Oh, boy, now that's a good
question. Or both. It could be both.
It could be. If anybody qualifies, it'd be
5:26
in the
morning. That's how my brain works. All right, David, thank you so much for the update. What was the previous story? What was the one right before what was your middle one?
I feel like
Otto
cold. Extreme cold and wind chills.
Okay, yeah,
the one before that was Ilhan Omar.
Oh, that was the one, yeah. So, I mean, you know, there are a lot of stories that when they come out, I feel like the obvious analysis is so obvious that I don't bother saying it. I mean, any kind of attack, assault, violence, spraying something on anybody who's exercising their First Amendment rights, let alone a public official. I mean, of course that's wrong. And I feel like that's so obvious you shouldn't have to say it. But then, you know, I see online that people are like, well, I don't know that Ilhan Omar, she's real bad. I'm like, oh my God, stop. What's wrong with you people? Anyway, so yeah, I mean, Ilhan Omar, I mean, even a broken clock is right twice a day. I'm not sure she gets that many things right. But nevertheless, no matter how wrong somebody is, you don't get to jump up in a press conference or a town hall or whatever and batter them with some kind of a spray device. That's just not allowed. It's not cute. It's not funny. It's, you know, it's wrong. I was in Arizona when Gabby Giffords got shot. You know, this is, he didn't use a gun in this case, but, you know, these things are very reminiscent of each other. So, and the effort to, listen, this effort to stifle other people or to use coercion and intimidation or bullying to stop other people from talking is, there's all kinds of flavors of that. Some in the extreme, you know, use deadly force. Some use just more scare tactics. But I had the same exact thought about the protesters when Governor DeSantis had come to the Fish House a couple of years ago, and a group of, you know, basically angry Democrats stood on the, you know, the south end of the park, Bertram Park, and, you know, chanted real loud and made a lot of noise to try to distract people from him, you know, doing his thing with people talking. I mean, that's the same stuff, though, right? Like, trying to shout down other people is a refusal to respect somebody else's basic right to talk. That's not respectful. That's not civil. It may not be illegal, but it's un-American. I mean, it's anti-American. The core of our idea as a country is that we let other people talk. We encourage other people to talk. Those who disagree with us, We may not enjoy hearing them do so, but we value them doing so because, you know, when you're not allowed to talk, that becomes other things. So the premise is we're going to listen, and we're gonna, at least even if we're not going to personally listen, we're going to allow them to talk. So, yeah, all of this stuff is, it's fundamentally horrific. It's fundamentally anti-American. And people who would engage in that kind of behavior, at the very least, don't understand what our country is supposed to be all about. And at the worst, actually hate what our country stands for because they think that stifling people's expression, especially on political matters, is grounds for them to intervene. That their power, their ability to use force, coercion, intimidation, scare tactics, even noise, is more important than respecting the value of all people to speak to audiences that are interested in hearing them speak. So, yeah, this is why the, you know, disruption of events, yelling and screaming inside events, all of that stuff, it's all born of the same stuff. It might not become violence, but it's a disrespect of the First Amendment.
Fox News, I'm Gianna Gelosi. Political tensions turning physical at a Minneapolis town hall when a man lunged at Congresswoman Ilhan Omar and sprayed an unidentified liquid with a syringe as she spoke.
At a town hall event, Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar was confronted and sprayed by a man there in the audience. It's not clear what the substance was, and Omar later said she was okay. The man, identified as 55-year-old Anthony Kazmierczyk, was arrested. No word yet on motive, but Omar had just called for the firing of DHS Secretary Kristi Noem.
That's Fox's Douglas Ader. President Trump kicked off his midterm campaign push in Iowa yesterday.
Our economy is booming, incomes are rising, investment is soaring, inflation has been defeated. Our border is closed, totally closed.
The president claims a Democrat-led Congress would reverse his policies. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. Chilly start to our day, 31 degrees right now. We've got clear skies. We'll get to our forecast. Brooke Richardson's up in just a few minutes. An arrest report revealing some new details about a Pensacola youth director accused of sexually battering a teenage girl enrolled in his program. 57-year-old Rodney Jones is accused of assaulting a victim while she was completing probation requirements in the Hoops program. The girl told police that Jones initially made inappropriate comments. Then the encounters escalated to sexual intercourse in his vehicles about five times over a year. She claimed that he paid her about $2,000 and bought her a cell phone. After she reported the allegations to police, Jones allegedly contacted her asking what she told law enforcement. He's been arrested and released on $250,000 bond. The Escambia Children's Trust has suspended funding for that program. A bill aimed at strengthening security on Florida's college campuses is advancing in the state legislature with some bipartisan support. Michael Gottlieb, he admits that he initially had concerns about allowing staff members to carry firearms on campuses, but he says the bill ultimately struck the right balance.
It's unfortunate that we need to do this in the post-secondary education space. This was really born out of a horrible tragedy in Parkland, and yet you have recognition from the city council, the town council, waving in support.
That legislation, House Bill 757, was filed in response to the shooting last year at Florida State University. It would require active shooter preparedness training for students and staff and toughen penalties for firing a gun near a school. The bill also creates a framework for trained, eligible employees to serve as armed guardians during emergencies. Well, yesterday at the Florida Sheriff's Association Winter Conference, Governor Ron DeSantis addressed the recent deadly shooting in Minneapolis involving federal immigration agents, which, of course, has sparked debate nationwide. The governor said that Florida is different because state and local law enforcement here cooperate with federal authorities, and that support helps to keep communities safe.
Creating this situation where just doing your job and just following law is very, very difficult because you have all this clutter and you have all this sand that's trying to be thrown in the gears.
And the governor also urged leaders in sanctuary cities to stop encouraging people to protest and target federal officers, saying that cooperation between state, local, and federal law enforcement is the key to enforcing the law and preventing violence like what's being seen in Minnesota. Now, the latest viral TikTok challenge has now led to a dead dog and a wanted teen suspect. A Volusia County woman says neighborhood teens participating in a door kick challenge caused her dog to get loose and hit by a car, and that dog later died. Daisani Sid says that a neighbor's security camera partially captured the incident. Police say the challenge involves participants kicking in random doors, and officers are reportedly dealing with several similar cases across the state. 5:35 here at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather.
We are going to be looking at a very cold morning with temperatures warming up this afternoon near 51 degrees, sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 30 degrees. Heading into Thursday, partly cloudy skies, high near 54. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 42. As you head into Friday, partly cloudy skies with a 40% chance of a stray shower, high near 57. And Friday night, temperatures dropping near 24. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. We've got 31 degrees with clear skies. Your next news in 30 minutes. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Judging by market expectations and policymakers' comments, there's virtually no chance the Fed will change its benchmark interest rate when its meeting concludes later today. However, the markets will most certainly focus on the agency's future guidance. TikTok has agreed to settle a landmark social media addiction lawsuit just before the trial kicked off. The social video platform was one of three companies, along with Meta's Instagram and Google's YouTube, facing claims that their platforms deliberately addict and harm children. Details of the settlement with TikTok were not disclosed. CNBC reports Amazon has sent a notice out to staffers in an apparent error acknowledging organizational changes in its cloud unit. The company is expected to announce widespread layoffs across its corporate workforce as soon as this week. The memo from an Amazon Web Services senior vice president states that the company notified impacted colleagues in their organization. Futures are moderately better. Yesterday, the Dow Industrials lost 408. That's your money now.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. Davis Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include 2 times Tuesday, 6 free shrimp added to the 6-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimptastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit Davis Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
Keep jumping around the dial all day.
Start your morning with Pensacola Morning News, weekdays 5 to 9. Stick around for Pep Talk with Meg from 9 to 11. Then it's MVR from 11 till 2, Hughes Hewitt from 2 to 4, and Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin from 4 to 7. One station, one day, everything you need to know. News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Informative, local, dependable.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby.
Good morning. 5:38 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Still cold out, and it will be for the next several days. I mean, it's going to peak up into the 50s midday, but it's several days going to be real close to freezing kind of all day long. So continue to use your preparation and your defense against cold weather. If you have a spell, use it, I guess. You know, I feel like an old D&D. Defense against cold weather. Woo, you can magic user catch. I'm so old. So yesterday we had a chance to talk to Chip Simmons. He is the Escambia County Sheriff. He was in Jacksonville with the Winter Conference for the Sheriff's Association. Sheriff, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing great. I got two sheriffs by phone from the same place in the course of 2 days, so it's very exciting for me. I want to get to what you've heard there, what you guys are doing, and I guess you're expecting the governor. What? Was it yesterday or today he's speaking?
No, the governor will be here in about an hour. He'll speak to us before lunch. And then we got Congressman Byron Donalds coming around lunchtime. We heard from the attorney general yesterday. That's part of it. We can network with these state officials.
Okay. Well, I mean, since we're there, let's go ahead and start there. What have you learned? What's been the big topic of conversation? And, you know, did you pick up anything useful from either Congressman Donalds or from General Uthmeyer?
Well, we hadn't heard from Donalds yet. We'll hear Donalds at lunch. But I will. Most of it is how much they support law enforcement. You know, their plans for the future. A lot of stuff we've already heard, but they just reiterate. And then they really just here available with an opportunity to discuss in smaller groups, you know, select groups, obviously, but because you can't talk to everyone. We have a pretty good turnout. We have 60 sheriffs of the 67 counties, which is pretty strong for a winter conference. A lot of the conversation is surrounding the potential for property tax reform and what that's going to do to law enforcement and to funding of law enforcement operations. So because there's no clarity in one bill or two bills, really, there's not a lot to be said. But we want to make sure that whenever the legislature considers these bills, that they consider public safety and they consider police and fire and they consider, you know, paving streets and all that sort of thing. So you think it's common sense, but a lot of times you have to continue to remind people what's important and what we feel like is important in Escambia County.
Yeah, I mean, as somebody who hates property taxes, hates the idea of them, believes that they're philosophically unjustifiable, I hate the fact that I'm being put in a position to defend property taxes, which my whole life I have hated philosophically, just because what's your alternate revenue stream? You know, if you're going to make it possible to have a sales tax and it's going to be, as Mike Kohler said, 11 to 15%, I mean, I'm certainly open to that. Talk to me. But don't pretend that you can cut all of this money from the budget and do me a favor as a homeowner and not find other revenue, because it will mean lost services. And of course, the question is, will it mean lost services in law enforcement and public safety? That's the big concern, right?
Yeah, that's and again, I'm like everyone else. I'm against property taxes also, but I am more for safe communities. And I am for the services that those funds provide. And the thought that there's enough waste, I'm not convinced of that. Again, I don't have access to everyone's books, and they have not involved me in some of their state conversations. But I would be highly suspect of an individual that says there's so much waste that we can just transfer all that to the essential services. I'm just, as you mentioned, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I don't want to make you name names, but we've, you know, the CFO has been saying there's all this money and waste out there. And I'm like, well, hey, where's the report? Because we still don't have it several months after they claimed all of these things. And you were the deputy county administrator for a while over some of the facilities. You know. You can disagree with Escambia County on some things, but there's no chance you're finding 20 or 30% of their budget is just plain waste. I mean, that's just, it's an insane allegation.
And one person's waste is another person's need. I mean,
sure.
It's true. You can find things to cut. Yeah, we just have to be able to make those decisions, and everyone needs to be okay with it once the decisions are made.
Right. Everybody wants more services at lower cost. So good luck in Fantasyland. That's just not realistic. Let's talk about some of the incidents that have taken place. A story while I was on vacation was this, or maybe just before, was this person who was impersonating a deputy. Was this in Century on Highway 29? Is that right?
Yeah, it was up in the north end of town. Early in the morning, a lady reported being stopped by, she described a dark-colored, like, boxy car. I'm envisioning one of our older Ford Crown Victoria type cars, and she said there was a small blue light in the middle center console, and then what's odd about it is he turned off this light after the traffic stop, and then a slender white male approached her, began asking her about, you know, if she's got drugs in the car and that sort of thing, and then asked to search her purse and I think the back of her truck, and then she started getting suspicious of him, obviously, and then she called us and we're like, we didn't stop you. It was not any agency that we're aware of. And so, obviously, this is concerning. We take this very serious. We have been looking for a car that would fit that description. We have been asking for people that might have information that could let us know if they think someone's, you know, weird enough to try to impersonate a deputy. And because this is a felony, and we will certainly arrest them.
I think for a lot of folks,
a real cop will certainly arrest them.
Right, right. I think for a lot of folks, they hate the fact that there is this person out there who has done this. But I think also what a lot of folks think is, well, how would I know if I got pulled over? Because, you know, not everybody's driving the Tahoe with all the bells and whistles and massive lights and everything else. How do I know for sure that somebody pulling me over isn't either an undercover or an off-duty, somebody who does have the legal authority to do it, but somebody who, you know, help me understand as a citizen. We've talked about it before, but it's good for a reminder. How can I know and what should I do if I'm suspicious?
Well, first of all, if you're suspicious, if it's a plain car, they don't typically have the marked cars with all the lights like we have. But if it's a plain car and they act, they're acting suspicious or you don't feel comfortable, just call 911. Put your hazards on and do not stop. Go to the nearest convenience store, go to a public area, or wait until you get a hold of our 911 dispatcher and they confirm that that is indeed a law enforcement officer. I say that, but I'll also say this. We don't typically stop cars in unmarked unless there's an immediate need. And even then, we call for a marked unit so that they can be with us. And we never turn our lights off during a traffic stop. That's crazy. So there's some things that you can be aware of. In fact, I'm not even a fan of these ghost lettering on the side of police cars that are so popular in law enforcement. We've had the opportunity, and I've chosen not to because I want my marked cars to be marked and clearly marked. And then if it's an unmarked car, if there's some sort of an undercover operation, then I wouldn't put ghost lettering on those either. So my point is, in Escambia County, you're not going to see ghost lettering on the side of our cars that look like an unmarked car, but they're really a marked car, so there's no confusion there. And if a car stops you, this unmarked car, and you don't feel comfortable, give us a call or call 911, and we'll let you know if that's an appropriate or a real police officer.
I think I remember the answer to this, but I just want to make sure. If somebody is either off duty or out of uniform, are they legally able to pull you over for a traffic stop? And if they are, even if they're legally able to, is it something that your agency practices?
They are legally able to do so, but we discourage our deputies from stopping cars for minor traffic violations in an unmarked car. What we ask them to do is call a marked car, and then a marked car will come and make that traffic stop for them if they feel that there is a need.
Perfect.
Now, if there is a DUI suspect or if it's someone we believe is a danger, you've seen some of our pursuits and our unmarked cars do get involved. But that's after our marked cars are already engaged.
Okay. All right. And that helps clarify, I think, for a lot of people, too. We're talking to Sheriff Chip Simmons. He's in St. John's County this morning at the Sheriff's Winter Conference. You guys had an incident at, was it Fast Eddie's with graffiti? Is that right?
Yeah, we got a call that a guy was, that someone had spray painted and done a lot of damage, really, with the spray paint at Fast Eddie's Fun Center on Michigan Avenue. They also spray painted one of our speed trailers. They spray painted a couple of the traffic signs. So again, as you can imagine, it's going to cost some money to fix these things. We get there and we quickly were able to locate a 19-year-old. His name was Orion Sky Dickinson. And we figured out he was a suspect because he had spray paint cans with him. He also had paint all over his hands and his face. So, you know, that's a clue for us, and we were able to arrest him, charge him with some other resisting and a couple other misdemeanors as well.
All right, well, good work. I mean, I'm always amazed by people who engage in graffiti. I'm always amazed by even the gang type stuff, because I think you're so powerful that you're going to express your control over this territory at night when nobody's looking in secret. So well done. Yeah, it's just not the most powerful thing that I've ever seen. One of the good things that you guys are involved in is West Florida High School, the Electrathon racing team. They've basically built a cop car to run on, you know, low power batteries for a long time, right? It's a cool program.
Yeah, it's a cool program. And man, it's a cool looking car too. If you look at it, we're pretty proud of our newer white Tahoes.
Yeah.
Proud of the fact that they're cheaper and we can get them faster and they look pretty sharp. So we're pretty proud of them. And then when the folks at West Florida Tech came to us and they said, hey, can you help sponsor us? We sponsor with our law enforcement trust fund, which is Seize Drug Money. We sponsor school programs to end up giving kids something to do, right, to keep them off a bad path. And in this particular case, they asked us if we would mind if they made up a car to look like one of our cars. And we said, sure, because obviously we want to be a good partner. But man, look at that thing. That thing, I'm looking at pictures now as we're talking, a white car, kind of a space age looking car. And it's got everything. It's even got our core values of courtesy, integrity, professionalism on it. got blue lights on the front and the back. I don't think that you could be confused about this being a police car.
No. It kind of looks like the old, what I remember from the 80s when people were trying to break like the land speed record rocket ships mixed in with one of those two front wheel, one back wheel kind of not quite motorcycle, not quite, you know, four wheelers kind of things. And then obviously very space agey looking with all the lights and everything. It's a very cool thing. I love to see you guys involved in that. One of the other things I had wanted to ask you about, you and I talk before we get on the air, and I didn't mention to you, but I feel free to weigh in or not. The shooting that took place in Minnesota, the most recent one, when I looked at this, and I talked extensively about this yesterday, but I want to give you a chance to weigh in because it's, you know, law enforcement, it matters quite a bit. This looked to me like a not justified shooting. It looked to me like a series of mistakes that all took place, and certainly nobody is in the wrong for simply carrying a weapon to a public protest of any sort. That's a normal concealed carry behavior. There's been a lot of things said false about this, but I wanted to give you a chance to weigh in. However you want to weigh in, you're my law enforcement expert. So any thoughts? And feel free not to comment. I mean, it's perfectly within your power not to comment.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have been asking us our opinions, and that's obviously been a topic here at the Sheriff's Conference. I will tell you that what we typically do is we're not blind to the videos. We look at the videos. That's the first thing we do. If we were to investigate, if this was my agency, and then we go a little deeper because it doesn't always tell us the whole story. We go a little bit before, during, and then certainly after as well. I did not see, and the videos that I saw, and maybe I'm not privy to every video, but I did not see this individual pull a weapon. I would have some concerns if this happened in our jurisdiction. Concerns from the initial contact. I would have concerns from the number of people that tried to pile on to him. I mean, I don't know that there's a need to have more than two, at the most three people on one individual. No one's taking charge. And then you've got the situation where it appears as if one of the agents actually took the gun or was in possession of the gun just before the shots were fired. Again, these are things that if this happened in our jurisdiction, we would certainly take into consideration. And if it were us, then everyone involved would be on administrative leave.
Yeah.
And then we would work with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and then we would work with the state attorney's office. We've had some officer-involved shootings in the past, and we've been pretty open about what, and a lot of times we put the video out. This is what we're working with right here. And you get a sense initially whether it is an openly good shoot or something that really needs some further investigation. And I think in this case, it will certainly need further investigation.
And at the very least, and I, you know, just because it's such an easy question to answer, in my opinion, somebody concealed carrying or in Florida open carrying at or near a political rally is committing no crime whatsoever as long as they're not in some prohibited sensitive space like a bar or a school. Or a government activity, something like, you know, the fact that you're around police and happen to be carrying is completely legal until you draw it, brandish it, threaten, use it, something like that, right?
We've had numerous conversations with my deputies, and we have let them know that my stance is that we support the carrying of firearms concealed, and we can support the Constitution, which allows for open carry in the state of Florida and certainly in Escambia County. And so I say that because I would expect that our deputies would encounter people that are constitutionally carrying or carrying within their right to do so. And so, yes, the answer to your question is it is okay to carry your weapon. Again, we're talking about Minnesota law versus Florida law, and I'm not sure what their laws are, their specific laws are. I can simply tell you what my expectations are in Escambia County, and my expectations are for our deputies in the county and people that are lawfully carrying a firearm pursuant to the Constitution.
Absolutely. Amen. And I know that's why I wanted to ask you about it as well. Sheriff Chip Simmons, as always, thank you so much for keeping us safe, keeping us informed. Also, I did get a text in. Somebody said that he was really grateful for your policy of clear and verifiable law enforcement officer identity. Good work doesn't need anonymity except for undercover operations, obviously. And so he appreciated you being clear about, you know, marked cars. Even the ghost markings are a little bit, you know, questionable. And I had that same exact opinion. So thank you so much for that policy. And we look forward to hearing from you next week. Thanks for the time. Be safe on your drive back in the cold.
You bet. Y'all take care.
Absolutely. 5:54 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Join Jonathan Cook from Jonathan's Flooring and Construction today at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Jonathan will be sharing his years of expertise on flooring, including insight on materials, installation, and maintenance, plus lots of great advice on home and office remodeling, including the kitchen, bath, cabinets, and more.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Ladies, join us to be the impact in 2026. I'm Martha Holden, president of Impact 100 Pensacola, a women's organization that has given over $18 million to nonprofits right here. Meet other members and hear about the impact our funding has made at meet and mingle sessions through mid-February. Women 18 and older are invited to join us by March 1st. For details, check us out on Facebook or visit impact100pensacola.org. That's impact100pensacola.org.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Saturday, enjoy Mardi Gras in Milton with the 8th annual Crew of Airship Pirates Mardi Gras Parade. The beads start to fly at 3 o'clock. The 5th annual Pas de Gras event will be Sunday from 11 till 4 on the closed down Garden Street between Tarragona and Palafox. Enjoy the parade, costume contests, vendors, and fun. Find out more at visitpensacola.com. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin, weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
I want a world where Frank Jr. and all the Frank Jr.'s can sit under a shade tree, breathe the air, swim in the ocean, and go into a 7-Eleven without an interpreter.
God bless you, Frank Drummond, and all of your common sense wisdom. 5:56 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. That's right, cultural reform from the files of the police squad. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries is calling for Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem to be fired. Jeffries says if Noem isn't fired, the House will move to impeach her. That announcement coming after two people, of course, have been killed in Minnesota since the start of the new year. President Trump is on the campaign trail. He was in Iowa yesterday speaking about the economy. He says it's booming at a rally in Des Moines yesterday. And Steph Curry is now an award-winning film director. Andrew, last night, the NBA star won a short film grand jury prize at the Sundance Film Festival. Apparently, he directed a film called The Baddest Speechwriter of All. It was about Martin Luther King Jr.'s speechwriter.
I kind of like that title.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I like it. I like it because it's obviously ungrammatical, but that's what invites you in to think about the subject. And I like that. All right. David, thanks so much for the update. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, you know, it's funny. I made that really uncalled for reference to Dungeons and Dragons at the beginning of the last segment. And somebody texted me and said, well, Andrew, it's not just that, but you missed the anniversary. And I said, what anniversary? They said 2 days ago was the, let's see, I got to do the math on this, but 50 years. Is that right? 50 years? I have two competing claims here. One was 1976, one was 1974. But in any case, the invention of Dungeons & Dragons on January 26th. Gary Gygax, of course, the most famous name associated with that. And if when I say, of course, Gary Gygax, and you're like, who? Well, we're from different worlds. I'm from Nerd World, and bless you, you're not, which is probably to your credit, not to mine. Anyway, so, remember when Dungeons & Dragons a few years ago became popular again with kids because they were watching Stranger Things? And the kids in Stranger Things were playing this weird old game, you know? Like they played an E.T. that, you know, nobody remembers. Anyway, 4-3-7-16-20. I'll move on because, you know, that's kind of where I feel we're at this moment. Also, happy birthday to Legos. How long we had Legos? PJ, you want to take a stab at this? How many years we've had Legos? Or origin date, if you prefer that way of answering it.
Since the 30s.
Close, but you overshot. 1958. I don't think we had plastics yet in the 30s. I think that came post-World War II, if I remember. I could be wrong. But yeah, 68 years young today, we have the invention of Legos, the best toy ever made. Also, the Dallas Cowboys expansion team announced in 1960. That's weird to think about. There was a time before the Cowboys, and some people were like, oh, I wish we could go back to that time. sorry, it's not a fair jab. And of course, this day in history, also the Space Shuttle Challenger, 1986. Disintegrated after takeoff, and I think that's one of those, you know, for folks who are younger, which is, you know, probably anybody under 40, really, that's a historical event. For those of us who are old enough to have been around and watching TV at the time, that's like 9/11, like Kennedy.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620 News Radio.